Good afternoon.
Hello, Steve.
Nick, I got to tell you, we enjoy it every year, but this was a particularly fun 5 days. And the way Saturday closed out and led into Belmont Day, you were on the air, and it was a great crescendo. I've got so much in front of me, including the biggest stars, the biggest prices, the best storylines, the Queen's two-year-old, Shadwell, Stradivarius, Dettori, Kodiak Saturday. There was so much going on here. What is your top takeaway from the 5 days?
Well, the top takeaway, the headline before anything else, is that the track was vindicated in its decision to go ahead with the meet. And not just to go ahead with the meet, but also do it in its appointed slot, which was, at the time the decision was taken, an extremely hard one, and one that did not escape its fair share of criticism, not just within racing circles, but outside as well. The PR director at Ascot, Nick Smith, faced an incredibly hostile interview from the well-known sports journalist Gary Richardson on BBC Radio 4's Today programme. And if that was reflective in any way of the mood of the public, the sporting public or the wider public, then Ascot could rightfully have been extremely jittery about holding their ground. But when they knew that racing would get the go-ahead to start again on June the 1st, instead of switching their fixture, they held firm and said that Ascot was the focal point, if you like, around which the early part of the pattern in Europe would revolve. And I think that decision proved absolutely spot on, given what we'd seen. I'm not sure I could have been as brave as they were, but as we saw, given the protocols that were followed, given how well racing was running in the 2 weeks leading up to Royal Ascot, it enabled the meet to be the success that it was. So that would be my main takeaway before we get into the much more satisfying detail of what actually happened.
Yeah, and that has been very similar to what has transpired in North America as well, with racing organizations and track managements having to, in some cases, cajole health officials and state government officials into letting them proceed. And it's been fairly seamless from what we can tell, watching and reporting. And it did seem that once things got going on Tuesday, it was just not business as usual, obviously, and it was strange, Nick, to pre and post race to have nobody in the saddling areas and in the enclosures, but when it came time to drop the flag, you couldn't beat what we got.
No, the sport was of a fantastically high standard, and it didn't feel as though the racing was in any way unusual. It didn't feel as though, certainly at the very top level, at the elite level, that the results didn't make a fair bit of sense. We had a 150-to-1 two-year-old winner who, in any ordinary year, would probably have had a chance to run two or three times and would have probably been a 16-to-1 shot, having won its next two starts after its debut. But that aside, it all made pretty good sense. And I for one was absolutely thrilled to see at least four of the horses trained in the United States running out of their skins. That was great to see, particularly on rain softened ground, which wouldn't have been ideal. So an awful lot of the racing was perfectly understandable, and I think that led to us being that bit more satisfied by it. We didn't feel it was an odd year in terms of what was going on the track, even though it was the most bizarre year insofar as what went on off it.
In terms of the performances, I guess you could juxtapose the crowning achievements of Battash and Stradivarius, and then sort of counterbalance them with the steady parade of disappointments, because there were some very prominent horses, Nick, that I don't want to say didn't show up, but they were beaten on the square, and that included Pinatubo again, Anthony Van Dyke, Japan, Mogul, but Stradivarius and Batash, they got wins that the public, I think, wanted to see.
Yeah, and listen, let's be honest. Both horses were entitled to win those races and win those races easily on the balance of their form throughout their glittering careers. But we know that Batash has had the odd blowout, and we know that he's been a bit more vulnerable at Ascot than elsewhere. He didn't have Blue Point to face this year, but he looked very good, and he can run well when he's fresh, and he's probably grown up a little bit as well. He was a bit of a delinquent in his younger days, but he's built up a magnificent portfolio of top-level wins now. And it's great to see a sprinter keep doing it at that level. And he is explosive and really very good on his day. I'd love to see him globe trot at some point, whether it's Breeders' Cup or whether it's Hong Kong or Australia. I'd love to see him take on international opposition just to see whether he could put it up to another country's sprinters and whether his temperament now was up to it, and whether, for example, he could go around a bend effectively at the age of six, having not done it in his career before. So it was lovely to see that. I was particularly pleased for his trainer, Charlie Hills, who had the 1-2 in that race in the King's Stand. As for Stradivarius, well, John Gosden insists he's better on a fast surface, and I'm sure he's right, far be it from me to second guess him. But the facts are that he's run four times now on ground that's described as soft, officially soft at Ascot. And those four runs number a third to Order of St. George when he was just a three-year-old, two runaway victories in the Gold Cup at Ascot, and success in the British Champion Stakes, albeit quite hard fought. So he is more versatile than perhaps even we thought, and the manner of his performance, again, albeit against arguably a slightly substandard field, was just jaw-dropping. You think that he's never won any of his previous Group 1 races by more than two lengths, and he won this one by 10.
You referenced back to Batash for a minute, and we'll kind of checklist, you know, the best stories, and one of the most consistent, Dettori, is part of this discussion, but speak for a couple of minutes about what Shadwell did here, because it was just, to me, certainly the first 3 days, and it did stretch further, but the ongoing success was just amazing. And you know, Crowley's part in this, I mean, he couldn't be stopped, essentially, particularly the first couple of days.
Yeah, I think there's probably a few intertwining themes here with the success of Sheikh Hamdan's Shadwell operation during Ascot. I mean, first is that there's been a tiny policy change insofar as that they are keeping more older fillies in training, so Nazif would have fallen into that category. Second, there's been a slight expansion of trainers and a concentration of some of the better stock with trainers that they really back, like Roger Varian, who produced their two most exciting winners of the week, Malatham and Calusi. And then Jim Crowley, who's really grown into the job, his third season in the role, having been champion jockey 4 seasons ago. And he had two really tough decisions to make on the first day. And the first of those was to ride Motocale in the opening race, when the stable had two better fancied horses in the betting. And he chose the right one, even though it was third choice, Motocale, three different trainers as well. And then the second difficult choice he had to make was between Mustachery and Mahatha in the Queen Anne. Mustachery was rated £8 superior to Mahatha on what they'd achieved, yet Jim chose Mahatha. Now, he didn't get any luck, but Mahatha still ran by far the better of the two horses and would doubtless have been at least placed and probably would have had a shot of winning if he'd got any run through. So it was two bits of judgment, first off, which must have filled him with confidence in terms of his own decision-making, and then the week just went brilliantly from there. You had to feel for Jim Crowley. I mean, 6 winners at Royal Ascot, and you get done by the only man who could do you on the last day, Frankie Dettori, in that irresistible, sort of just unquenchable form. I mean, there was no way that once Dettori had a sniff of it on the last day, you just knew that he was going to keep winning races.
On Thursday, there was a point where we were, you know, we were taking the races as much as many as we could, and I had Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman on, and I made the point that, you know, Dottori was, you know, he'd been okay to that point, but then all of a sudden, you know, he put the spurs to it, and, you know, finishes with this incredible fury, essentially. And obviously, you know, part of this gets into what I referenced as Kodiak Saturday. I don't think I've ever, I don't remember that, Nick, you know, a sire and not exactly, you know, a Galileo or, you know, or see the stars. Kodiak with three winners in an hour and a half at Royal Ascot. It was stunning.
Yeah, there have been a number of notable stallion performances at Ascot over the years. New Approach and Zoffany both had three individual two-year-old winners with their first crop at Royal Ascot. Kodiak this year in that very short space of time. He's an established, you know, elite-level stallion now. Yeah, he essentially a source of speed, but just a top-quality stallion. And it was nice to see. It was a very, very significant week. If we're on the breeding front for Knight of Thunder, who is a sophomore sire, who had an amazing run with his two-year-olds last year, and I think a lot of people thought, "Wow, is this for real?" He's had 28 individual winners in his first crop, and equaled the record of Fastlief, and produced double-digit stakes winners. And can this carry on, or is this a flash in the pan? Well, boy, oh boy, it's carried on. He had the Jersey Stakes winner, Malatham. He had the Coventry Stakes second, Carter. He then had a stakes winner at Belmont Park. Oh, was it last night? Graham Motion Filly, whose name has momentarily escaped me.
Bradenbury.
The horse that's the one, Bradenbury, exactly. And he then had a stakes winner in Ireland, trained by Joseph O'Brien. I mean, all within 24 hours, and a brace of two-year-old winners and a three-year-old maiden winner for Shadwell. So, yeah, that's pretty impressive, too. So there were a number of notable stallion performances, for sure.
I want to bring up a couple of obscure or more obscure horsemen and that had success. And, you know, when you mentioned the expansion of Sheikh Hamdan and Shadwell, tell us about Owen Burroughs.
Well, Owen Burroughs trains at the Kingwood House Stables in Lambourne, which is where, if you trace the history of Shadwell right back to the 1980s, one of the most infamous episodes in British racing regarding owners and trainers occurred when Major Dick Hearn, who was confined to a wheelchair at that point in his life after a riding accident, was asked to leave Her Majesty the Queen's West Ilsley stables and was replaced in that stable by Lord Huntingdon, who then trained Her Majesty some Royal Ascot winners. But Major Hearn was asked to leave those premises in quite controversial circumstances and created a bit of a scandal and ill feeling at the time. And Sheikh Hamdan, who had not only bought Height of Fashion, the Dam of Unforwain and Nashwan and Nair, from Her Majesty the Queen, but had also given Major Hearn significant patronage off the back of his knowledge of Her Majesty the Queen's families, which he bought into, then installed Major Hearn at Kingwood Stables in Lambourne, which was a fantastic facility. So he then was the owner of that complex. Major Hearn was succeeded there by Marcus Tregoning, the trainer of Mahatha, who still has horses to Sheikh Hamdan, but Marcus moved out of that complex 4 or 5 years ago, moved down to Whitsbury, and he was replaced by Owen Burroughs, whose license was initially held by Barry Hills as a satellite operation for a season, and then Owen took the license in his own name. Owen used to be the assistant come head lad to Sir Michael Stout for many years, prior to which he was a jumps jockey for Martin Pipe and then Josh Gifford. And incidentally, when he was an apprentice jumps jockey, he shared digs down in West Sussex with Roger Varian, who had four winners at Royal Ascot, including two for Sheikh Hamdan. So it's not exactly a surprise that horse racing is a small world, but there are far fewer than 6 degrees of separation in any two people in this game, that's for sure.
I'm glad I asked. An interesting background, and I'm going to imagine, Nick, that after this Royal Ascot, Alan King is not going to sneak any pork chops past any bloodhounds ever again.
Well, this is a true man for all seasons. I mean, Alan King, as you know, Steve, because you take a keen interest in the jump scene over here, the steeplechasing scene. Alan King is the protege of the great late David Nicholson. When he started training national hunt horses in the late 1990s, great things were expected of him, and he delivered them almost straight away. And he's had a whole host of good horses, and as he reminded me this week, on prompting, I might add, because he's a pretty humble guy. He trained three Grade One winners at the Cheltenham Festival in the same week back in 2007, I think it was, Catch It, Boy Prosthetic, and My Way to Souls. And he said that, you know, nothing was really going to come close to that until this week when he trained three Royal Ascot winners in his second, you know, in his second career, if you like. I'm trying to think of someone who might be the equivalent in the US, maybe somebody like Jonathan Shepherd. You know, if you would trust him to train, well, he has trained Breeders' Cup winners, you would trust him to train three in a week at Royal Ascot if he was training here, and look at all the success he'd had as a steeplechase trainer as well. So, yeah, a fantastic dual-purpose trainer. I mean, now puts him right up there with some of the great names to have excelled under both codes in this country, the David Ellsworth and the Peter Easterbees and names like that who've been able to win at the top level, jumping and on the flat. It's no mean achievement.
Yeah, and you know, in terms of his horses running well, I mean, everything he sent out distinguished themselves. It started on day one with Coeur de Lion in the nightcap at a nice price, and then he ends up in the nightcap on Friday. Our man Kev Humphreys, his best long shot play, he picked Scarlet Dragon, Nick, and you know, the internet went wild. And then Who Dares Wins closes out, you know, the terrific week of racing with a dogged effort in the Queen Alexandra. I mean, that he just would not, I forget who it was that was chasing him home, but would not let him by in that yeah, 2¾-mile effort.
Yeah, and it was a good effort. The horse he was chasing was the Grand Vizier, who won at Ascot last year, so he wasn't being chased down by a horse who didn't know what he was doing at that track over that sort of distance. So that was a great effort, and it was nice that Henry Ponsonby has been a great supporter of Alan's over the years and a great supporter of young jockeys. It was very pleasing to see his colours carry to victory by both those horses, and a winner of peace for Holly Doyle and Tom Marquand, who live together and had their first Royal Ascot winners. And they're both hugely exciting young talents. Big news, of course, today is that Tom, who had been widely expected to ride the Derby favourite English King, Stradivarius' owner Bjorn Nielsen and trainer Ed Walker in the Derby on July the 4th. Tom had ridden the horse to win the Linkfield Derby trial, but they've taken the decision today that there was a certain jockey who didn't have a ride in the race. John Gosden wasn't going to be represented in the race, and very difficult to leave Frankie Dettori sitting in the weighing room. So Frankie Dettori will replace Tom Marquand on English King in the Derby, which has, as you imagine, ruffled a few of the Twitterati feathers anyway. I mean, I think it's perfectly understandable and sensible decision, but we get very emotional when jockeys get replaced in this country.
Well, in fact, that was potentially a storyline when it came to the Belmont, which I'm going to ask you about momentarily. Nick, some other final strokes about Royal Ascot this year. Mrs. Harrington, got to mention the coronation win for Alpine Star, the turning back sharing. We're going to talk to Graham Motion next. And on the female front, there was also Haley Turner with the win with Onassis, which filled our coffers, yeah. All right. And there was one other, right?
Well, Holly Doyle, yeah, on Scarlet Dragon. That was probably one of the rides.
Holly Doyle, there we go.
Haley Turner's, yep, ride on Onassis was brilliantly patient. A bit very similar to Thanks B for the same trainer at the same price in the same race last year. I mean, talk about lightning striking twice. And as for Jessica Harrington, who's at the other end of the experience spectrum, but another brilliant dual-purpose trainer, this was a triumph not only for her, but also the lineage of Mies. one of the great universal names of the sport. And the fact that Alpine Star is a half-sister to Alpha Centauri, who'd won the same race as such a brilliant filly 2 years ago, a triumph for the Niarchos Flaxman breeding operation. And those fillies, those half-sisters, great-granddaughters of Mies, direct descendants, and daughters of Alpha Lupi, who herself was a daughter of East of the Moon, who herself was a daughter of the great dual breeders cup heroine herself. So that's one of the finest families in the stud book, and you cannot beat that kind of pedigree. And it was great to see her win as well as she did.
I also wanted to bring up one handicapping note the people should file away, and that is in regards to Hey Jonesy, who was awful early in the week and then righted the ship right in the Wokingham, and I was shaking my head. I saw the price on the tote, Nick, and I reached for the wager button. I was too late, and then I was kicking the cat down the stretch when it became obvious he was going to win.
It's sort of easy enough to say in hindsight, I suppose. I think Hey Jones is one of those horses. He's got loads and loads of talent. I remember seeing it a couple of times as a two-year-old and thought, my God, that's the fastest thing I've ever seen. And I was always expecting him to be a 5-furlong horse, but he's more effective at 6 because I think he likes bossing a field. And I think over five the first day, I think he was just finding that. But it was sort of shock and awe, and he gets taken on, and I don't think he likes it. I think when he can boss horses a bit, he's better. And he was in a smaller group, and he wasn't unnecessarily harried. And I think that suits him quite well. He's talented, but it all dropped right for him. Great day for Kevin Stott, who'd earlier won the Diamond Jubilee Stakes on Hello Yumzane, now a dual winner at the highest level, and for the trainer Kevin Ryan as well. And Kevin's a wonderful trainer who's had so many winners at the top level now, and just sort of gets on with the job and doesn't receive probably the attention that he should. But in Kevin Stott, he found another exciting young rider who's going to have a really exciting career, I think.
I keep thinking of things I wanted to bring up with you. Fanny Logan, who we took a shine to last year at Breeders' Cup. I was so enamored with her, and she ran so credibly. And how about her performance?
Yeah, this is a perfect example of Galston Dottori dynamic and why it works so well. Dottori confessed to me privately and then publicly on my show on Sunday. He said, I didn't really give her much of a shot. She's taking on Colt, she's taking on the Derby winner. Yeah, she's a nice filly, but I didn't really think she was necessarily up to that sort of level in open company, even though she'd run well at the Breeders' Cup. And I think sort of John Gosden sort of really gave him a bit of a motivational speech beforehand. He said, John said, come on, don't just kind of toss this one off. I really fancy this. I think she'll go really close. And I think that gave him he said that made him approach the race in a rather different way. And she's obviously been working very well. I must say, I saw her 3 or 4 times last year. Saw her in the paddock on whenever it was. Was it Thursday or Friday she ran? Friday, because I was there Friday. And she looked a completely different beast. I thought she strengthened massively. If you want to have, if you're trying to get one bet on now, way ahead of time, you want to be betting Fanny Logan for the Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf at Keeneland, because that will be her target. And she is well up to winning an edition of that race on the form she showed the other day. So I know if she stays in one piece between now and then, that is the race that she'll run in again. Last year, I reckon, was a little bit of a sighter for this year, and she'd be very hard to beat.
And finally, the Queen's two-year-old, Tactical, gets that victory after the Queen had been just beaten earlier, and it could have come away with 2 wins. And of course, the only disappointment, I'm sure, was that we wouldn't have all been treated to to her being presented the trophy, which is always entertaining. She puts on a smile, boy, when they hand her a trophy, she lights up like a Christmas tree.
But I she'll have got no less of a buzz out of the win of Tactical, and I think.
Oh, no doubt.
The last few of Her Majesty's Royal Ascot winners, Dartmouth, Estimate, they're horses that have been gifted to her. So Dartmouth was a horse that a Dubawi horse that had been bred by Sheikh Mohammed. And Esmet was a half brother to Enzeli, who came from His Highness the Aga Khan. Now, Tactical is a horse that she bred herself. And interestingly, it's not one of her oldest families, but she bought, I think she swapped the mare in foal with Sheikh Farhad, something like that. But this is down as a home win. And that will have given her more satisfaction, I guarantee it. The fact that this was bred at the Royal Studs will have given her a huge, huge thrill. Incidentally, the Horse and Hound magazine managed to get a bit of a scoop because they got Her Majesty to give them her five racing moments. And it was quite striking to me, even though I'm sure Esmet gave her immeasurable pleasure by winning the Gold Cup. I think Esmet only came in at four or five behind some of her homebreds. So I think that tells you all you need to know. And interestingly, the other horse of hers that ran really well at Ascot, First Receiver, the horse is Michael Stout, who was only just beaten by a power pack Ryan Moore in the King Edward VII Stakes. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had a go at the Derby. I think I would if he was mine. He is a grandson of a half-sister to Phantom Gold, who won the Ribblesdale Stakes for the Queen under Frankie Dettori back in 1995. So again, we were talking about the lineage of Miesque, and you're about to have Graham Motion on, who I'm sure will tell you about sharing and shared account. This was another triumph for years and years of patience and generations of top class thoroughbred athletes.
A spectacular 5 days, and thank Nick for starting our coverage and wrapping it up on the back end, and everybody that contributed, Kev Humphreys and Vance Hansen, and with many and Nick's opinions, with lots of success for the listeners. Nick, before we wrap up, give us your thoughts on the Belmont action after you got off the air early on the early shift. Talk about the Saturday afternoon.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'd like to, without wishing to be too sycophantic, I'd like to tip my hat to Mike Tirico, because he handed to me at Royal Ascot, and I think or we rehearsed a handover at about 8:30 a.m. Eastern, and he was said goodnight at about 13 hours later, I think, or 12 hours later. So that was an absolutely extraordinary marathon. Got a great man, but not exactly one that he can't take in his stride. And as for the racing, I mean, just remarkable. Sorry, my eldest daughter is just chatting away. Where was I? Yeah, as far as the action on the track, I thought Tis the Law was great, and just Gammy just blew me away. I heard you talking to Tom about her before I came on, and well, I mean, she's just a freak. I put a tweet out saying, best performance of the day anywhere in the world by Gamine, and some people responded saying, best performance of the century or year or decade or whatever. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you've got to give it, you've got to break the UK audience in generally on that one. You suggest that something somewhere else in the world happened that was better than anything you've seen at Royal Ascot. But yeah, it was, she was amazing. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. I just can't wait to see her again. And it wasn't too good to be true.
Well, the season really between the Royal Ascot stand and the first Triple Crown card, it feels like, you know, the rest of the calendar unfolding here for us here and for you there and internationally. Actually, we haven't even talked yet about the Japan performance of Cafe Faro. That looks like that our friend Paul Pompa bred that. There's another impressive Faro progeny, and looks like they're going to make it to Derby in September. But, Nick, it really feels like we have some momentum throughout this, throughout the world.
It does, really. It doesn't feel like we're quite back in the groove, because there's still a bit of catching up to do. But I sort of feel that now we've had the Belmont and now we've had Ascot, Ascot, I think, once we get the Derby done here on the first weekend of May, and then the Eclipse follows it straight away the day after with Enable, you're almost, and then the July Festival after that, you're almost back on track then. as far as the European pattern is concerned. And then, I think we'll feel the same as we build up to Derby time. And I think, as you say, with the Japanese horse and Tis the Law, you suddenly got quite a bit to talk about.
Now, and to be excited about, and we're always excited when Nick Luck contributes to At the Races. Nick, thank you so much for everything, and we'll look forward and talk soon.
It's an absolute pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
Nick Luck, everybody, and there's your Royal Ascot. The bow put on the 5 days, and as we head to our first break of the morning, as we race into the week, gotta one more time thank Kevin Humphreys, who was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And that went right through, you know, Friday, obviously, with Scarlet Dragon closing out the card at 50-1, then opening the card on Saturday, and he sent everybody home happy as well in the nightcap. It just was unbelievable. And he's going to be in Singapore next year, but doesn't mean he won't be able to handicap with the same aplomb. So hats off to a brilliant stand by Kev, the long shot lad, as I dubbed him. You know, he said right from the get-go, take his opinions. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to key off of the obvious horses. He's going to try to find, you know, horses that are totally obscured. And he did it again, and he does it all the time. Cheltenham too, and just a great opinion. And you know, you take some 0-for-4s. There's no doubt. I mean, it's a Dave Kingman approach. You know, you're going to strike out a bunch of times, but then there's going to be a 600-foot job that sends you, you know, that sends you home happy. And we got a lot of nice emails. And Kev Hum, Kevhum, if you want to thank Kev personally on Twitter. And thanks to Nick Luck as well. And Vance Hansen with Vance handed out three nice winners. So it was as much fun as we've had following Royal Ascot. Going to follow up Nick's visit with Graham Motion. He'll talk about Sharing's Try and what he'll do now post Ascot with her. But also two stake wins over the weekend in New York, too. Radikowski in the Critical Eye Thursday and Bradenbury yesterday. Graham Motion next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Serious X.